America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
We welcome you back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live. We are presented by PPV.com. It's Dan Canobio. It's Chris Algieri, the champion. He fought Manny Pacquiao. He fought Errol Spence. He fought Amir Khan. He fought in bars. He fought in hotels. He fought on the streets. He fought at Madison Square Garden. He fought in Barclays Center. He fought in the UK. Am I missing anything? Where else have you fought?
My house growing up.
He fought in his house against his brother with his giant biceps.
Yes, and now my nephews, my very large, tough nephews. Got to fight them too.
Chris Algieri has fought everybody, and now we do podcasts for PPV.com, which is the presenting sponsor of this show and our the best way to live stream live boxing events. 10/25 quickly approaching. Fundora versus Keith Thurman, Oshaki Foster versus Stephen Fulton is streaming live on PPV.com. We will be there in some capacity, live chat for sure. Be out there in Vegas bringing you the content like we always do. No subscriptions. You can stream it to your all your devices. Big screen TV, of course, for a watch party. If you're on the go, you can stream it to your phone, tablet, all that stuff. No subscriptions. Just enter your email and go as you please. All right, Chris. So it was a busy weekend for us. I was in Montreal covering the MVP Prospects Championship Night Edition. Montreal's awesome city. Good
great
gracious,
city.
That is a fun city. Probably my favorite trip I've ever been on in terms of like fight cities. You were in Pro Box doing your thing, fight of the year there too. So busy weekend for the boys. I'm feeling a little tired today, but I'm back, baby.
I was in Orlando, not quite as cool as Montreal. Not knocking Orlando, but it ain't no Montreal. I used to go to Montreal quite a bit back in the day before that old Pandy. I used to go up there quite a bit in the summertime, just take a drive up
really?
With my guys. Yeah. Went to the F1 up there a couple times in Montreal, banged around a little bit. Had some
that sounds
fun.
Like a horrible time, F1 in
horrible.
Montreal.
Just miserable time with just beautiful people and fantastic vendors and watching super cool, super fast supercars do stuff. But Montreal was cool. It's been a while though. I'm glad to hear that it's still a cool place to hang out.
Definitely a cool place to hang out. The fight scene has kind of dwindled a little bit because if you're not putting on club shows and, you know, they're not getting the biggest fights anymore. Like they were getting big fights when Jean Pascal was still banging.
Jean Pascal. Yep.
He was there in attendance. And, Stevenson fought there a bunch of times. Xorogati started his career there before he came down to New Jersey.
Jersey, where I'm at now.
Yeah. This fight scene.
I'm actually working in the gym that Arturo used to train out of.
Wow.
Yeah.
So give us an update on this Netflix movie. Give us an update on this Netflix movie that you've been working on.
Yeah, so we started principal photography today. So we're starting to film now. The actors are all properly trained. They're all in good shape. They all look and sound and move like boxers. Now it's just shooting the scenes and making sure that they do their job and look like they're realistic fight scenes. So that's where I come into play. I'm the fight choreographer. So work on a lot of that day in, day out. This is literally I'm having dreams about this all the time now. Like I can't not think about it. Yeah, I keep telling all the actors, I'm like, I cannot wait until I don't have to see your faces every single day and think about you all day on the weekend.
Then you'll miss
and
them.
At night. And they'll laugh. And I don't think I will. I don't think I will.
For those of you that don't know, Chris is working on a Netflix boxing movie about the 1984 Olympic team, which is widely regarded as maybe the best team of all time. Meltzer Taylor, Evander Holyfield, Mark Breland, Pernell Whitaker. One of the coolest
Biggs,
gigs.
Henry Tillman. Yeah.
One of the coolest gigs. So you've been getting them like the first month and a half, or even maybe more, has been just getting them 2 months. It's just been getting them to learn how to fight, right?
Yeah. 2 months have been spent on getting them in shape and teaching them how to move and look like boxers. And so now it's essentially we're entering a training camp.
And now we're entering the fight, which is shooting the damn movie.
Right. So now it's like, all right, guys, if you're going to, if you, as good as you're going to look, as we've done our job, the rest is up to you. You know, if you're going to do your diet, you're going to stay in shape, stay, you know, keep your conditioning, you know, for fighting, for filming. But we're not doing that anymore. We are just working the fights. So making sure
it's kind of like a real training camp. Like if the fighters get in there and they look terrible, the director's going to come up to you. It's just like a loss. It's like taking an L. Like he's going to come up to you and say, what were you guys doing in training camp?
What happened? So I don't think we have any issues. I think the guys are primed and ready to go. They're young. They're hungry. Some of them actually are hungry because they're dieting, trying to be ripped and shredded for their scenes, which I get. But no, they're good, man. I'm proud of them. They put in a lot of work, and I think they're ready to knock this out of the park.
Love that it's going to be a boxing movie out. Love that you're involved. And when is there any expectations on when it could drop?
I would imagine. I feel like the turnaround now on movies is really quick. So I would say probably spring 26.
Like it. Loving this boxing movie's coming out. I feel like there's another. Isn't there another boxing movie coming out soon?
Yeah, there's the Nazim Hamed stories coming out. That's a cool one. I think there's going to be a bunch of those biopics coming. I mean, dude, how do we not make a Ricky Hatton movie now? Like that's got to be in the works, right?
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. Like a top five list of movies that have to be made about fighters. Like we've
dude. Enough,
no offense.
We're doing that. We got to do that show. We got to do that show. That's a good show.
Yeah, top of the head, Arturo Gatti, Ricky Hatton. Obviously, Tyson. There's been movies on Mike Tyson. There were supposed to be movies, still movies being made about him with Jamie Foxx.
I got an interesting one. Sonny Liston. I think Sonny Liston is a really good story because he was a gangster. He was literally like a criminal and heavyweight champion of the world. Like I think that's
Francis Ngannou.
His story about how he would walk countries to get places and everything he went through. That's
and
a
the
good
final scene is him dropping Tyson Fury, him leaving the UFC, dropping Tyson Fury, and then like this dude walked through like mines and shit. Like, I know he's not a boxer, but he did box.
Yeah, I mean it's still a combat sport story. Listen, we got the Mark Kerr Smashing Machine. The Rock is playing
it. Like, I'm gonna definitely see that.
Yeah, I remember the original documentary, The Smash Machine. I don't know if you ever saw that, Dan.
No.
Pretty amazing. And they actually talked about it on the Joe Rogan Experience. Joe Rogan had Mark Kerr on, and they were talking about how that documentary came to be. And, you know, Mark was a badass, like super good high-level wrestler, like traditional like wrestling, like Greco-Roman freestyle wrestling, and then went into the budding sport of MMA that was – you know, occurring in the 90s. And the guy was a beast. He was like a total beast. And then they were doing a documentary on him expecting to follow a champion through training. Meanwhile, they're following a guy go deeper and deeper into drug addiction and dealing with pain and having like a ton of, you know, issues mentally, mental health disorders and things like that. Super interesting, really intense story. And that's obviously why the movie's being made. And got The Rock looking saucy as hell. And,
well, he got like really big for that. Then he like got smaller.
Now he's super small. Yeah, he's like a vegan now.
Which is like everyone's like, is he sick? Is he? But he's an actor. Like Christian Bale went like skinny, fat, fat, skinny, ripped. Like The Rock is an actor. I know some people. That's a debatable topic.
He's the highest paid actor in the world.
Well, there's some rumors that this is the one that might actually like win him like real awards because obviously he's got the action genre down and the you know live animated stuff and all that. But like, is he a real actor? So I know that he in the smashing that guy went on with Rogan to tell his story too. So I've been seeing a lot of clips
Mark Kerr out soon.
Yeah, so the boxing movie industry is alive and well. Chris is a stunt coordinator. He probably will leave this show one day and become full Hollywood. Are you going to be in the movie?
Potentially. We don't know yet. There's a desire for me to make a cameo. There's a desire by especially all the actors. Like,
is that like a Hollywood term? Like a desire? I've never heard you use that phrase ever. Is that a Hollywood?
I'm just saying that the guys are asking for me to be in the movie. Okay. So like all the actors are like they want. They're like, well, you got to be in the movie. You got to be in the movie. You know, but you know, we'll see.
I thought that was like a Hollywood term. Like, yeah, there's some desire for me right now. My agent told me I'm desired.
I've gone full Hollywood media trained. There seems to be a desire to have me in the film, but
oh man, that'd be a sad day if you don't if you are become a Hollywood.
I don't think I got Hollywood in me, bro. I'm sorry.
I don't know. We'll see. Let's get into the boxing stuff. Over the weekend, a recent Gervonta Davis Twitter storm. He has since deactivated his Twitter. But if you caught it at the right time, you saw him talking about how he wants to retire from the sport after the Jake Paul exhibition. He says boxing's dead. He got into it with Shakur Stevenson about why they haven't fought and why they will likely never fight. And then, poof, the social media accounts of Gervonta Davis disappear for the umpteenth time. But in that time frame, you got to figure out what's kind of going through the mind of Gervonta Davis, which it's a very interesting mind. It's a very convoluted mind of Gervonta because I don't know where he's at sometimes. But the biggest thing to come out of this is the fact that he says, I'm done after the Jake Paul exhibition, which if you've been following along, like that's not huge news because he did tell me that he doesn't want to box anymore. And you kind of, he's been moving like a fighter that wants to leave the sport. But to hear him say it and or tweet it, it's kind of a bigger moment to come from this weekend.
It's not surprising at all to hear that. I mean, I've been saying that. I as soon as this fight was announced, I go, oh, Javon doesn't want to fight anymore. This is his cash out, and we're never going to see him in a real fight ever again. I believe I said that on our first show when we talked about this. I'm like, we're never going to see him in a real fight again. He flew a little too close to the sun. He touched what a difficult fight is like. He touched what defeat could feel like when he fought Lamont Roach, and he was like, I don't like this. I'm good. I'm going to go make $100 million fighting this giant guy who is apparently a boxer now. And that's it. I'm going to ride off to the sunset with my money. And that will be it. I will retire undefeated with a draw.
Well, I will say this. The plan was always Jake Paul, no matter what happened in the Roach fight. So it that isn't technically 100% because his plan was to knock out Roach. Like he had knocked pretty much everyone out in his career. A 93% knockout rate was even higher heading into the Roach fight because he didn't knock him out. And he was going to step into the ring. Another thing that he told me in that very brief interview we did was, I'm going to call someone out in the ring. I've never done that in my career, and it was going to be Jake Paul. So the plan for Tank was to fight Roach, win, call out Jake Paul, who was in attendance in Brooklyn that night, and then fight Jake Paul. So it wasn't like, oh, I'll take on Jake Paul now because I looked bad in the Roach fight, or I don't want that Roach fight.
No, that my just, point was that he's never going to have a real fight again.
I know. It just exacerbated the process. It just made it look even more undefendable. Is that a word?
Indefensible. If he had blitzed Roach and then fought Jake after, I would have been like, I bet you he's going to come back and fight again. In a real fight. I could have been wrong, but I think since the Roach fight was as difficult as it was and as uncomfortable as Gervonta looked at the end of that fight, I remember that fight ended. I talked to you that night. I was like, that guy's never getting back in the ring with that guy. He was way too uncomfortable with him. He did not want to be there toward the end of that fight. And I think that just, again, like you said, it's exacerbated. Good word, Dan. Big word. This whole scenario by the way things actually unfolded.
Funny how it works. Timelines in boxing are very, very delicate because it's how you guys get to find as fighters because there isn't 162 games. There isn't a full career. You have to move like you want to be moved. And how you move gets remembered a long time from now. And I don't think Gervonta Davis cares. And that's another thing, too, because he also got into it with Shakur Stevenson. Gervonta Davis, Shakur Stevenson verbally sparring on Twitter, going back and forth about why they won't fight each other while they'll never fight. Stevenson has pretty much come to grips with the fact they're never going to fight. Tank gets on Twitter to try to tell him that, you know what, no one's scared of you. They lose money when you fight. You're not a type of fighter that anyone wants to watch. So why should I give you that moment? Why should I give you the money? Why should I potentially put you over if we ever fought? Which was kind of angered a lot of boxing fans and it set off a storm about, you know, is this right? Is this wrong? What's Tank thinking? Does Tank have any legs to stand on when it comes to night fighting Shakur? Should Shakur take any blame in the fact that they've never fought because there was a time where he could have signed with PBC. But if the plan was always Tank fighting Jake Paul and making an astronomical amount of money, would it have mattered if Shakur signed with the PBC? So it just came into focus as well. This all happened in like an hour span. So the back and forth between Twitter, between Shakur and Tank on Twitter was pretty eye opening.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful gift when Gervonta gets to the Twitter fingers, because we get an access into that, like you said, that convoluted mind. And we get some information as well, because the fact that he's saying it out loud, just like you said from the top, that he's not, that they're never going to fight, which honestly, boxing insiders all knew that. You know, I've been saying that fight's never going to happen. Guys in the gym today are like, yo, do you think Gervonta and you know, you think Tank and Shakur are ever going to fight? I'm like, no, absolutely not. If it hasn't happened yet, it's not going to happen. And it's a shame, because that's one of those missed opportunity matchups. And I understand why Twitter got mad when Gervonta says that fight's never going to happen. Why would I be doing that for you? And it's not about doing it for Shakur, it's about doing it for the fans. So that answer shows that Tank does not care at all what the fans think. He's not here for boxing. He's here for himself. He's here for his bank account, which I don't blame him. I get it. But listen, if that's the stance you're going to take, you're gonna lose some fans, and your legacy is going to be affected.
Well, that's what he talked about on the stage at the first presser, the New York City presser, is that the fans switch up on me all the time. So what do I care? Because they opened it up to the fan media questions, and all like majority of the media questions were, will you fight again after this? Will you fight Shakur? You know, will you fight Tio? Will you fight Haney? Will you fight some of the other guys that you haven't stepped into the ring yet? And he was not having it. You know, he just went right into the fact that fans are going to switch up on me anyway. They've already switched up on me after the Roach fight. So what do I care what fans think? Why don't you ask them why they haven't fought me and all that? But what it comes down to is, yeah, I understand, like, I'm trying to put my into the shoes of a fighter like Tank, or just a fighter in general. It's why do you do this? Why do you want to take on Shakur Stevenson? And conventional wisdom and what we've seen out of athletes in any sport, especially boxing, is to be able to say that I face the best and I beat them. But for Tank, I don't know if he has that same reasoning. I don't know if he has that same
desire. Fire. We're going to bring that word back. Desire.
Desire.
Let's do that.
I don't know if he has that same desire. I mean, I feel like he did early on in his career, and he made a lot of money. And he didn't exactly fight top-tier talent, but he made a lot of money. He sold out arenas. And once the PBC realized, oh, my God, like, we're selling out every arena, and no matter what city we're in, he's knocking these guys out. This is working for us. This is a plan that is – we're printing money. So, therefore, things change with Tank. We did get the Ryan fight, but that was with extreme asterisks, with a weight hydration clause and all that. And Ryan has shown not to be someone that is at the elite status anymore. But it was a huge fight. And
possibly Tank never was, Ryan.
What?
At the elite status.
Well, yeah. Heading into that fight, he was looked at. He hadn't had any real warts like he has now. Like, he didn't have the Rolly loss.
But he was looked at like he potentially, this guy is elite. He could get there. But since, I mean, I don't know. There's a good argument that Ryan was never elite.
Yeah, I just wanted to, when he was firing back at the media at the presser, I just wanted to kind of fire off my own questions and kind of give some follow-ups and been like, dude, like, it's not like fans, for the most part, don't really care about your personal life. It's just sad truth. They just want to see you fight the best fighters. Like, if you would have fought Shakur or fought Teofimo or fought Haney or any of those guys, and I understand it takes two to tango, it doesn't just fall on Tank, but he is the money guy. And if he says, I want to fight them, they find a way to make it happen. You know, that's what the fans want to see. And unfortunately, they don't really care about your mental makeup. They don't care about what's going on in your personal life. They just want to entertain me. I'll put down my $80 or I'll fork over a lot much more to travel to your fight, to watch you fight. And, you know, I think sometimes that gets lost on some boxers, because all they see is the Twitter stuff. That's why he keeps deleting his Twitter, because he speaks his mind of what he's feeling, and then he gets ambushed with all responses, or just fight your core. We don't want to hear this, blah, blah, blah. And he deletes it. And he's like, what do I care what fans think?
I left Twitter a long time ago. I think it's a cesspool of vile people. But regardless, when you're talking about, you know, Tank in this situation, there's a point in every fighter's career where they understand that they're in the driver's seat and the promoters actually have to listen to them. This happened to me, much smaller scale, but you mentioned the PBC, where you're like, wow, this guy sells. just keep him right here. And he fought subpar opposition because he didn't need to. Everyone tuned in anyway. That was me in Huntington on Long Island at the Paramount. Joe DiGuardia had a built-in fan base, a ticket seller who would sell out the Paramount every single time that my fight was announced. He was fine just staying there. He would have kept me there till I was 50-0. I refused to be a local guy. I was not going to be a local sensation. I told him, I was like, people need to see me. I need to get on TV. We need to bring TV to Paramount. We need to get me out of my hometown. I don't want to fight here. I wanted to fight everywhere. I wanted everyone to see me. I knew I was good. I knew I was world class. I knew I could do the best at the highest level. I knew I could win there. And I forced my promoter, Joe DiGuardia, to bring ESPN to Huntington. I forced Joe DiGuardia into positions where I had to come in as the B-side and get my title fights and my opportunities. So fighters have that. And you see that with a guy like Terrence Crawford, who's a great example as well, who early in his career just did what he was told. I can't get these fights. I'm stuck on this side of the road. Then later on, he's calling up Spence and being like, bro, let's go get this bag together. And then you step into the driver's seat and you understand, like, oh, these promoters actually work for me. I can tell them what to do. Tank never did that. And that's going to put a big asterisk on his career when you look at his resume going forward. Because so you probably could have made that Shakur fight, dude. If you really wanted that Shakur fight, it would have got made.
Yes. And I'm very glad you, first of all, that's exactly right. And the promoters will just keep doing the same thing. And if it works, until the fighters speak up and realize that the promoter works for the fighter, not the other way around. We see that in boxing all the time. Number two, I'm glad you brought up Spence and Crawford, because there's a lot of similarities to Spence and Crawford to Shakur and Tank. In that type of scenario, there was talks that Crawford was getting frozen out. And it was because Spence did not want to potentially lose, number one, and give up what he's built so hard working on. And he was a sort of cash cow for PBC. He was selling out arenas. He was his own little economy right there. Hey, if I could just keep on fighting, you know, other champs or keep on fighting other welterweights, keep this PBC thing going. Why do I have to fight Crawford? Like, he's got his own problems. He's not with us. He's with Top Rank. You know, they're being difficult. So there was this idea out there that one of the reasons that fight was never made was because, you know, Spence's side didn't want to put Crawford over, who they have no obligation to.
Ties to, yeah.
Exactly.
I don't think it was Spence, by the way.
No. Yeah. There's a lot of theories.
Spence would fight King Kong.
Right. So I said Spence's side. Right, exactly. It's never usually in the hands of the fighters. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. That's what makes the sport case by case, because there's a lot of different variables. Now, if you look at Tank and Shakur, kind of the same type of scenario where these two are regarded as the top two in the division. They've been the top two in the division for a few years now. Tank is the bona fide ticket seller star in this. He's like Spence. Shakur feels like he's the one that's getting frozen out. He was with Top Rank, just like Crawford was. And now he's trying to get that mega fight and potentially win and take Tank's spot. And Tank is like, not so fast, bro. Like, these guys all have egos too. Like, I want to be on top. I want to be the money man. I want to be, when I walk in a room, everyone wants to talk to me.
And I want to go out on top. I don't want to hand over my crown.
I believe there's an aspect of that. I believe that is going on with this fight never being made, or now never ever going to be made. Because if you have someone like Tank, who really doesn't care what the fans think, who is perfectly fine finding a Jake Paul and then, you know, never seeing him again. I do think we see him again, but maybe not for a year or two, or maybe even 3 years. So there's some of that going on, which is, you know.
There's also the spite of, like we were talking about Spence, the Spence and Thurman situation. Spence literally was just like, I don't like this guy. I don't want to give him an opportunity. Like, that's a thing, too. Like,
yeah, we saw that.
Talking about, yeah.
We saw that in their back and forth.
Of not trying to help a guy, the not wanting to hand over the baton. There's a lot of different aspects to this, and I think fighters have a lot more control than even they understand.
Yeah, it's, you know, before this all got deleted, how much you make in the fight, Teal? That's what Gervonta said to Shakur. You were hurt, and you know how much in my mentions right now, you know what I did when we sparred, which I guess he's saying he got the best of Shakur when they were sparring. And we sparred, and you know how I will feel if I said I would give you a payday, but I'm turning my back. So give you a payday. So exactly, it's that.
Yeah.
It's not like... Yeah. Yo, I want to step in the ring with you and let's see how we can handle this and may the best man win. It's like, dude, I'm giving you the payday, because Tank knows what it is. Like, he's one of, like, what, the top five money men in the sport. So
currently, yeah.
I think Shakur coming out looking like roses with this, you know, like smelling like roses. That's the saying. Like looking like a rose would not be good. Smelling like roses is Shakur Stevenson, because he's the one pushing for this fight. You know, I love what he said on stage at the Crawford homecoming event. I don't know if you saw that. Like, he's just definitely grown up in front of our eyes, Shakur. And now with all these exhibitions that we're seeing and all this, it seems like Shakur is really like, I want to be like Crawford. I want to win belts in multiple weight classes and fight the best.
Yeah, I think Shakur has always been that guy. He wants all the smoke. But, you know, you're saying how he's matured, but well, let's see when he has another questionable performance and then he gets to Twitter. Because
part of the Shakur Stevenson experience. I don't know if I would hold that against him in terms of him being childish. It's just, he's just like, he's moving different. Looks like he's going to be fighting Teofimo first quarter of 2026. You know, that's his first fight.
Am I crazy and I'm thinking like, I don't know if that fight's going to happen. Like,
everything is not happening until it happens.
Yeah, but that one more than most. That fight doesn't feel like it's going to happen to me. Even when it keeps getting announced.
I poo-pooed on it.
Yeah, you know, like guys were bringing it up in the gym, and I was like, my answer to everything was like, we'll see. Like, I'm so nonchalant.
Wow, Chris, you're so negative. You're like, no, bro, I've been doing this a long time. Yeah. You guys are new to this sport. You're actors. You're athletes. You probably followed the sport from a distance. No,
it's signed. We'll see.
It's not at all. Yeah, everything is not happening until it happens. That's kind of why, like, one of the reasons I poo-pooed the fight. Also, because I just don't think it's going to be, like, a banger. I think it's going to be a high-powered chess match. Is because, like, I don't know. I just don't think they'll come to it. Like Teofimo, how many times we have had a fight lined up and he pulls out, or you know, I think Shakur wants to fight everyone, and that leads me to the next topic here is if Tank is now retired, we close the one chapter of this quote unquote Four Kings. Taking a look at the Four Kings a bunch of years later, it's Tank, Ryan, Haney, Teofimo. I think it's safe to put Shakur into that now. He should have always been in that conversation. He was just at a smaller weight class, and he just got kind of frozen out of that, and I didn't like that because he's obviously just as good as all those guys. But with Tank now, quote unquote, saying he's done after the Jake exhibition, you know, how are we going to look back at these four fighters? You know, Tank, Teofimo, Devin, Shakur, and Ryan, they all should have fought each other at least once by now. So far, we've only had Tank, Ryan, Devin, Ryan. Kind of crazy. The common denominator is Ryan Garcia has fought two of these guys when that's crazy.
So I'll say this about Ryan. You know, I posed the question that maybe he wasn't that potentially elite, but in terms of heart and balls, Ryan's got him in spades, dude. He's world class elite when it comes to that. He will fight. He's willing to fight, but also he's a money guy. So it's
smart money wise.
Yeah, I mean, he came into this money. He was rich before he was in these big fights. So because he made his own money and you know, through social media, and that's just the world that we live in at this point. But was willing to fight as well, and he seems to be the kind of guy, he wants all the smoke as well. He's just not as good as these guys, but he did step in. He did go in there, did make a lot of money, and made a lot of money for the other guys too. And that's another reason why I think it's easier to make those fights with Ryan, because you're gonna get a bag. You know, Gervonta said how dangerous he knew Ryan's hook was, and he was like, yeah, you see the way that guy knocks people out, makes me kind of nervous. But I'm getting a lot of money for this fight, so I'm willing to take that risk. So guys are willing to take the risk to fight Ryan. But in terms of where do these guys fall legacy-wise in terms of this considered Four King era? I would say they can't hold the jockstrap of any of these guys because they didn't fight each other. I don't care. This is not even a Four Kings era anymore. They didn't fight, and they're not going to fight. So I don't consider that. You got to fight each other. These guys all fought each other. Marvin, Sugar, Tommy, Robert, Roberto, they all fought each other. These guys didn't fight each other, so then there is no error. This is a non-issue. These guys had an opportunity to have an era of Four Kings. They didn't take it. So
well, if Shakur and Teofimo get in there, Teofimo hasn't fought any of the guys, but we've had this debate before. Teofimo beat Lomachenko. He's beat a diluted Taylor, but you know, he went up to 140 and still did the thing. He's accomplished a lot, Teofimo, but he's never been in the quote-unquote mega fight. Shakur, outside looking in. But now if he fights Tiafoe, that's his first mega fight. Haney has fought Ryan Garcia, and we all know what happened there. Haney did not fight Tank. Tank did not fight Haney. Tank did not fight Tiafoe. Tank did not fight Shakur. There's still time, but Ryan Garcia has lost to Rolly Romero. He has lost to Tank. I don't know how to freaking categorize the Haney fight, but it's technically a loss. But he beat him.
It's not a loss. It's a
no contest.
I would consider that a win.
How are we looking at that? A win? I think it's a win.
I think it's a win. I think he showed. If he ever could have a discussion for being world class, that was it. So that for me is a win.
We do see how if Haney comes back and blitzes Norman or beats Norman, he's not going to blitz
Norman. Just beats Norman. Yeah.
Then Haney is looked at in a way different level here. And then Haney,
for sure.
As much as they haven't gotten the ring yet, and we haven't seen, I still think there's time left. There's not 30 yet.
There's going to be but imagine if they fought when they were in their absolute primes when they were young, there's always going to be that, like,
different time.
Hey, Sugar and Tommy, like Leonard and Tommy fought and they were like young and in their primes. And even Duran, when he jumped up to fight Leonard, like there wasn't this over marination the way there is now.
There is a debate about fight early and get it over with and maybe potentially do rematches, or wait till you're 30. When you have established
maximize
a name, plus it's way different now with the networks. Like,
Dan, you know what that shows me, though?
Network deal.
It shows me you're not confident.
Me or them?
I would look at that like, let's fight now. I'm going to beat you now. And then my star is going to go boom. And I'm going to jump 10 steps. I don't have to wait till I'm 30 to make the money. I'm going to make the money tomorrow after I whip your ass.
Well, Ryan Garcia took that. That's the Ryan Garcia. He fought these guys before he was 25. I mean, he fought Devin Haney and Tank.
But he also had the money in the bank. He had the money in the bank already. So he didn't need those fights. He took those fights to prove to people that he could actually fight.
Yeah, I respect.
And that's where I have a lot of respect for about it.
I respect the way he like pushed really hard for these. But if in the 80s, if there were as many streaming services as there is now and obligations, if you fight for Golden Boy, you have to fight with under their banner on their streaming service. And that's what's prevented a lot of these big fights from happening. But it's been shown that you can get bypass all that if they really do want to fight. And I still think there's time. I still think there's time with we can take Tank out of this, because I do believe he will step away. Will he come back? That remains to be seen. But I do believe he's going to make 40 to 50 million, even more for the Jake exhibition. And I don't think we see him for a while. He's still 30 years old. Could he come back? Who knows? He's the old elder statesman of the four of the five. He's the oldest one. The other guys haven't even are still in their late 20s or mid to late 20s. You know, Ryan wants to get back into that win column. I think he has to avenge that Rolly loss or get another win, fight Haney again, maybe fight Tiafoe. I believe like the time is now, especially with the way the boxing's shaking out with Turki Alsheikh and the amount of money that's being thrown around. I think Shakur would fight any of these guys. I think Shakur is so motivated now, especially with the Crawford win, especially like him looking at himself as like Crawford 2.0. I think Shakur wants to smoke. But yeah, I would say it's like incomplete. The fact that we've only gotten two fights out of this, and we're almost going on like 8 years of when that first.
And they're approaching 30. So like I think it's past us, unfortunately.
And like in terms of them being like the top tippy top of their game, like, you know, Tank already had the draw with Roachman. He could say it was a loss. Haney.
And he was 61 underdog in that fight, by the way.
Right. And Haney has lost, or whatever you want to say, or you know, Ryan.
He's shown that he's been dented. Let's say
right. None of the guys are undefeated anymore. Like Tiafoe lost to Cambosos. Shakur is the undefeated one. That's why Shakur's pushing so hard here. It's like, dude, I could beat Tiafoe. Okay, I become two division champ at 140. I can go back down to 135, or I could stay at 140, or I could go up to 147, potentially beat Haney. And then we're looking at, oh wow, Shakur's the guy that was on the outside looking in. I don't have any losses. I am Terrence Crawford now. I'm taking that. Taking it and run with it. That's interesting to me. Shakur could be that guy.
It is and it isn't. I think boxing people know when you talk to real, like when you talk to fighters, they're like, yeah, Shakur beats all those guys. And I think a lot of fighters have that mentality. And he seems, he's the guy who chomps at the bit to get these fights. And even when he has subpar performances, or at least in terms of entertainment value, it's not because he's not willing, you know, to get in there. The guys won't fight him. So then he just has to fight. He has to fight. And he fights a lot of difficult styles, like a De Los Santos type. And he goes out there and does what he has to do. He gets the win. But, you know, he's the kind of guy, he's just not going to get the recognition or the credit until he beats your favorite fighter. And if your favorite fighter doesn't want to step in the ring to risk building him up, then what's he going to do? I remember I've told this on this podcast many times. Excuse me for our ardent listeners, but it was after the Nakatila fight where he had a subpar performance. You know, he fought cautiously against a guy with a big right hand who at the time was very, very dangerous. And Bob grabs me after the Bob Arum, that is the Bob father, grabs me after the show and goes, "What'd you think about Shakur?" And I said, "Bob, he did what he had to do. He had a guy who had a very dangerous right hand, and he fought cautiously. It wasn't his best performance, but it is what it is." And he asked me, "What do you think we should do?" I go, "Put him in with the best there is. He's going to do this. He's the exact same thing. He's going to shut them down. He's going to disarm them, and he's going to win easy." Next fight was Oscar Valdez, and he did just that. And then he got attention, because like, oh, not only does he disarm, you know, the random dangerous African guy, he also disarms your favorite Mexican warrior, and he does it in style and class and doesn't get touched, and it's super impressive. So you're like, oh. So that's the key for Shakur, is he's just got to get those guys in the ring with him so he can do what he does. The guy, he's a defensive wizard. He makes good fighters look ordinary. And yeah, but until he does that to your favorite guy, you're not going to give him credit.
The problem is just the way he fights. Like he's just been labeled at this point, and then that's the difference between him and Tank, and that's why Tank got to the
tanks,
level
tanks
he's
a
at.
Destroyer.
That's why he's the money man. That's why he dictates that the fight happens or not. And that's kind of what Tank was saying in one of his outbursts. Was like, dude, he said, nobody wants to see you fight. You're boring in the ring. You're boring outside of the ring. They lose money whenever you fight. Your own daughter said you almost got knocked out.
Wait, what? What did he say? What was that last one?
I don't know if you saw that. When they were walking out of the ring after Shakur Zepeda, Shakur had his daughter, was holding his daughter. And Shakur was getting interviewed, and his daughter went to the mic and said, "You almost got knocked out." You didn't see that? It's one of the best clips, man.
That's funny.
Because, you know, it was that one moment where he got pushed up against the ropes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really funny.
Nothing and like a little girl to keep crush your confidence.
Right, and Tank will use that against you. But yeah, so the problem with the reason why Tank is the money man of this group is because of the knockouts. Knockouts sell, and he just that's the way you put asses in seats. Shakur does have a good fan base, but it's nowhere near Tank's. You know, Ryan probably has the second best next to Tank, and Haney and Teofimo have struggled to sell tickets and have struggled with popularity. So, you know, it leads me to my next question is who's next up? Like you say that the chapter's closed on the Four Kings, right? I don't necessarily think we have another group of all the fighters together. I think more along the lines of we have some names that are out there. And I'm not talking about like current champions, like a Benavidez who's about to turn 30 and has been in some bigger fights, or any of the champs. I'm talking like next up, who you want to put stock in, or might even be too late to put stock in. One of them, I think, is Emiliano Vargas.
Agreed. Superstar written all over him. But the question with him is, are the goods really there? If I hate to question this because I love Vargas and his family and I love what he's been doing. But Dan, like yourself, I work in this business from every angle for many, many years. I know everybody. I know every opponent. I can look on a record and can be like, ooh, and I can look past the numbers and be like, ooh, that guy can fight. I know this guy. I saw this guy fight this other prospect and he did this, and this. I have not seen a single guy on Emiliano Vargas's record behind the numbers that I knew who the hell they were or where they've been or who they fought. That's not a good sign. Does that show me that the people who are picking the opponents, the matchmakers, are handling him with kid gloves so he goes out there and destroys these guys because they know something that we don't? I don't think so. I think Emiliano is for real. But why are they not taking risks? It just leaves a question mark. And I think the fans who are really looking can see that. So we got to see Emiliano step up. and not just with guys with better records, like guys who can actually fight. I'd rather him see guys with ugly records who can really fight to show what he's really got. Guys who are not going to get starched in 15 seconds, even if their record's good. Abdullah Mason, I think, is a can't miss. Problem with him might be marketing. Clean cut, nice. People don't love that. It doesn't sell. Doesn't sell the way the Adrian Broner, Gervonta Davis, getting arrested and getting pulled over and gun charges gets. You know, it's just the society we live in.
It's not even just that though. It's more along the lines of Vargas is out there. Every time I open up TikTok, Vargas
he's everywhere.
He's everywhere. Very marketable. Mm-hmm. Abdullah Mason is just not that guy. He's very quiet.
He's in the gym. He's in the lab. He's with his family.
Well, that's the difference. Like you just talked about, what's the resume of Vargas and who are some of the guys?
Vargas is also for now Vargas' son. It's a big
exactly.
deal.
So it just shows you how fighters can be moved differently by the same
look at Bruce
promoter.
Carrington. Bruce Carrington is a guy who gets out there. I would argue his profile is bigger than his resume at this point because he's everywhere and you see him. He's all over the place.
Yeah, but he's for sure. But with back to Mason, like he has fought some tough opponents. He has fought former
the exact opposite of what I said about Vargas.
Exactly.
Yes.
He has fought guys that have fought for world titles. He has fought guys that have never been stopped, and he stopped them. He just is not Vargas, though. Vargas doesn't have that resume, but he has the marketability. That's the catch-22, as we talked about this on the show numerous times. It's only so often you get an Oscar De La Hoya, who is Emiliano Vargas-type marketability with Abdullah Mason's skill set, and you have yourself a 10-15-year rocket ship.
Yeah,
with Mason,
that everyone's going to make money around. Money was just flying off of that rocket ship that was De La Hoya.
Exactly. So I think they're in the discussions, and Moses Satuma is in there as well, because if he can be the next heavyweight guy, which many say that he is, then there's no doubt, because when you're the
heavyweights
heavyweight
don't
phenom,
have to be as marketable.
Yeah, I think he's a pretty interesting guy. He's not like, you know, any of the guys we listed before in terms of like going out and doing interviews, but from what I've seen, he's like when you do an interview with him, he is pretty interesting. He just is not like a what's his name type, Vargas, Ryan Garcia type.
Yeah, he's not going to be a lightning rod, but the way he performs is, and you're going to get the eyes, and that's why I said about heavyweights, you don't have to be as marketable. If you go out there and you're knocking big dudes out, people are going to tune in. They don't care about interviews when you're the baddest man on the planet. You're the biggest, baddest guy on the planet. The heavyweight champion of the world is the baddest man on the planet. And when you're that guy, you don't have to sell a shtick. You need to knock people out. And Moses does that. So I would consider him, yes, next up in terms of that.
Coppinger's reporting that Atalma is being planned return for December. Two names being considered are Michael Hunter and David Adelaide as Zhuhai Zhang, Jarrell Miller, Philip Hergovic were all explored. Latuma could be paired with Derek Chisora in separate fights or as the main event of its own show. So that's I like Hunter and I like Adelaide.
Hunter's a hard fight.
He should be able to handle Hunter. Hunter's so inactive and he's up there in age.
Sure, but he's tricky. He's a
To see rounds. Give me 6-7 rounds of Moses Atalma.
Very tricky. He's very experienced. He's got a good amateur pedigree. He's got a bloodline. That's a tough fight. That's a very tough fight.
Then watch it be Adelaide, not.
It's going to be Adelaide. Adelaide makes much more sense. Easier fight to make. It's a UK guy. Yeah, it's going to be Adelaide.
And those are the three that I believe there's probably more out there. But to the top of my mind, like now, if we're closing the chapter of the four kings, which I don't think we can 100% close, who's next up? Like Vargas, Abdullah Mason, Atalma, Vargas versus Mason, Mason versus Shakur. Keyshawn Davis was in this discussion until he just, oh my God, I can't believe.
Just imploded.
I can't believe it, bro. I was just like, in boxing, nothing is quicker than a boxing 24-hour news cycle. It's actually like 10 seconds in boxing. So, right?
No, it's true.
Keyshawn Davis.
You think it's bad in American politics. It's worse in boxing.
Because it's a week-to-week sport. If a fight happens, it takes over. Like Keyshawn Davis, it's probably good for Keyshawn Davis. We've kind of forgotten about what he did. But I was thinking about it the other day. It's like I cannot believe where we were at last year at this time compared to where we're at now. Last year at this time, he's in this discussion with the four kings. He's a world champion. Now he is not a world champion. He's disgraced He's talking about retiring. He's talking about maybe I'll come back. I don't know. I can't believe how quickly it turned for that kid, because he should be in these discussions too. Like Abdullah Mason versus Keyshawn Davis.
And another guy who seemed like he wanted all the smoke and was willing to fight anybody. When they announced that he was going to be fighting De Los Santos, I was like, yes, this is what we need. He's an avoided guy. He's a risky guy. No one wants to fight De Los Santos. And Gervonta Davis is like, I'm fighting that guy. And then obviously that fight fell through.
Keyshawn Davis. Gervonta Davis didn't fight him either.
Who did I say?
You said Gervonta. It's all right. Keyshawn
Davis. Excuse me. And then he comes in like, what, like 10 pounds overweight, doesn't even, just blows the way in. Yeah, you're right. I mean, but it was all self-inflicted wounds. This is Keyshawn. And, you know, listen, he struggled with mental health issues in the past. They're rearing their ugly head again, obviously. That's because, you know, again, these are self-inflicted. He had the world behind him and ready. But not everybody
can. Yeah, he had a lot of momentum.
Not everyone can deal with the pressure. Dan, that's a big part of this. That's a real big part of this sport. Being good at the sport is not just being good in the ring, not just being able to fight, not just being able to get through a training camp and stay healthy and all of those things. It's also being able to deal with the psychological pressure and all the weight of what seems like the world on your shoulders.
Yeah, and maybe that was he was crying out or something. But yeah, to do the miss the weight and the fisticuffs afterwards with his brothers.
Oh, that was horrible. That was not good.
Let's move over to another story here. Zuffa Boxing has found a home. This was long rumored. It's Paramount Plus and potentially CBS. A press release says there'll be 12 events with select few to air on CBS. It's a five-year deal. This is most likely the league that we've been hearing about, the TKO League, the Zuffa League, led by Dana White. Turki Alsheikh is involved with it as well. So 12 events. I think this is a really good thing for boxing, to get boxing on Paramount Plus. When it seems like everyone is dropping out of boxing. Top Rank doesn't have a home right now. HBO, Showtime, everywhere. Now we have a company in Paramount Plus who is in with UFC, is now in with boxing. At the surface level, this looks great. As you peel it back, of course, it's boxing. So there's going to be a lot of layers to this, especially with Dana White and the Ali Act, and what he wants to do to it or not do to it. But I think this is a good thing. I think it's another player, and let's see how it all plays out. It's going to be this league. I think overall this could be fun.
It's good for now. We'll see how it plays out. And this is not the first time something like this has been announced, but we're getting 12. We're getting a monthly boxing show. That's awesome, which is going to have huge production and value. And it's on a platform that people are going to be able to view. And I think we're now – this is really smart because you – first of all, let me say this. Duh, this was going to happen. UFC is on Paramount Plus. TKO, Zuffa Boxing, Dana White, duh. Of course, Paramount Plus is where this home lands, or where this lands as a home. But I believe this is going to be a great crossover, because now all the people who are buying Paramount for UFC now have access to boxing, and they're going to see the ads on the UFC fights. They're going to see the ads when they're on Paramount. They're going to see, you like UFC 777? Well, guess what? On Friday, we have Zuffa Boxing.
Hopefully, we get it on NFL games too, on CBS.
Yeah, so you've got that, exactly. So yes, ultimately, it's a good thing. It's more access. Another good thing, another positive to this is, you've got a major player like Paramount Plus who's taking on boxing. We lost Showtime. We lost HBO. But now we're on different platforms. We've got all these streaming networks. Who's to say that Peacock doesn't go, hey, you know what? If CBS and Paramount have boxing, we need to compete with them. We need a boxing card. We can't let them, our competitors, have something we don't, because it's a way to pull fans away from our network to their network, to our streaming service to their streaming service. So now Peacock goes, We need a boxing show. Hey, Top Rank, come on over. Let's do a monthly 12 boxing show. A 12 fights a year boxing show. You know, blah, blah, blah. Who knows? So I see this as healthy competition. I see this as changing the market to a degree. Hopefully, I mean, I'm being very optimistic, but I think this is ultimately a net positive.
Well, let's get into what could be the troubling parts. What you just said is good and bad as well. So if another streaming service comes in and they're all competitors and they're all copycats, will that mean that only these fights can only air on Paramount Plus? Is that going to stop potentially big fights from happening? But I don't think these are big fights. This is going to be that league. This is second or third tier types of fighters. It's like Dana White's Contender Series, maybe with a little more names that we've heard of. as fight fans. So another thing too is that they say that they're only going to recognize the ring rankings. They're not recognizing any of the other sanctioning bodies.
Yeah,
no WBC, no WBO, no IBF. And that could be music to a lot of boxing fans' ears because, as we know, those organizations, for the most part, are pretty bad. And they are pretty much pay-to-play operations. I'm not going to go – reportedly, I'm going to say, so I don't get sued. But here's the thing with that, Chris. If they're only recognizing the ring and the ring – like, who makes up the ring panel? I don't have to go and look. They're humans. It's only humans. So – they're only recognizing the ring, which could be looked at as a good thing because it's somewhat independent, but it's really not because there really isn't anyone independent. Are they going to rank only the fighters that are signed to Zuffa? My next point. Okay, you can. It's a we pretty much know it's going to be a league type of fights, second tier, third tier. None of those fighters are going to show up in the top 10 of the ring, and if they do, then they are no better than the WBC, IBF, or WBO, which you will see names in those rankings that you've never heard of. Well, you see a guy that we've have heard of, like a Keyshawn Davis before he became a champion, ranked very highly by the WBO, but not even in the WBC rankings. What is that? That is clear, like pay to pay. You know, he wasn't in the WBC, wasn't paying those sanctioning fees, so he's not in that ranking system. So there, that part is very fishy, and that part is remains to be seen how that all plays out.
Well, yeah, you put that very eloquently. Yeah, if you remove all those guys who are ranked themselves, who are the best better fighters in the world, the best fighters in the world, and you know you're ranking your third tier guys as you know top tier, it's very confusing. It's like oh this guy's ranked number two. Who the hell is he? And isn't that
is
the same
it ranked two in Zuffa? Or is it ranked two in the world? Isn't
that the same? Wait, this guy's ranked number two. Isn't that the same weight class as Dave Benavides? What are these rankings? It's not going to work doing that. It's not going to work. It's going to be very confusing to fans. I think it's going to split fans. I think it's going to split the sport. I think it's going to cause a serious schism in terms of you know the Zuffa boxing fans and then boxing fans. But also it's going to make a schism between the fighters because you're not going to see those guys crossing over, like you said. But also they are lower tier, so we're not going to be as concerned unless this stays for a while and these guys develop into stars. And now there's a star league. And the other, an outside league, or there's this Zuffa league, and then there's everyone else. And once again, how do we get crossovers there? I don't know. Again, on paper, right away, all good. But then when you peel back the layers, you start to see that there's some rotten parts. There's some rotten spots in that onion.
Who are they appealing to? Casuals? Because casuals don't care about the stuff. They don't care about the inner workings. They don't care about the Ali Act. And that's a huge part of this now is the Ali Act. Dana White did an interview with our friend Brian Campbell, and Dana says that fighters can choose to fight under the old or new Ali Act. He says he's not touching the old act, but he will add to the Muhammad Ali Act that's currently in place. And basically what that is UBOs. And these UBOs are going to be Zuffa Boxing. So Zuffa Boxing can be the promoter, they can be the sanctioning body, and they can issue the belts. So there's going to be a Zuffa champion, but it's not going to be the WBC champion. Like
it's way too much room for corruption. Way too much. It's an authoritarian approach.
Confusion more than anything.
Well, that's what I talk about, the schism in the sport. And I don't see how it happens. Also, how do you change the Ali Act? Don't you need an act of Congress? What the hell are we doing?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Donald Trump, Dana White is best friends with him.
But he's just going to sign off on this thing? That's crazy.
Yeah, man. Of course he is. Dana has his reasonings for why he believes that it could be better.
Don't let my red hat fool you. That would be a really stupid move by Trump to change this.
I don't think Trump cares, man. It's not the best piece of legislation. Lou DiBella will tell you that, and he helped write it. There's a lot of holes in it. It was the best they could do at the time, and it's held up over the last 25 years, the Ali Act. It protects the fighters. It allows the fighters to get paid. Allows the fighters to not get manipulated by promoters. Allows the fighters to not get manipulated.
That was the intention. Listen, I am a fighter. I've dealt with the.
But for the most part, it's worked. But there's obviously cases where it hasn't. It doesn't. But in terms of boxing being boxing and remaining it has worked.
Lou DiBella wrote it, like you said, or helped write it.
Helped write it.
Lou DiBella is an attorney. He's also a boxing promoter. The holes were planted on purpose, and the promoters know how to interweave through those holes in order to still take advantage of fighters. Fighters still get taken advantage of. The problem with the discussion of changing the Ali Act is the change should be, it should be bigger. It should be stronger. There should be teeth to it. It shouldn't be more open the way that Dana is looking to make it. It should be actually steelmanned rather than punch holes in it and make it even weaker. That's the real issue. The real issue is it doesn't have enough teeth. The real issue, it's not solid enough. It needs more to it. It needs to be steelmanned.
Yeah. What Dana wants to do is make it.
He's slowly abolishing it.
He wants to turn it into the UFC where, you know, the top guys don't make the top money, but the lowest guys won't make the low money that you see in boxing. Like a guy could make a steady income as long as they're signed with him, as long as you're with me, because he did say that in the interview too, or he's done a lot of interviews in the last 24 hours, 60 minutes, and went on a media tour. It's like, all right, you can go fight under the Ali Act with the other promoters out there, or you can fight with me and you can bet with me, and I could make you more money than Eddie Hearn could, but you're never going to reach the Canelo level. And then Dana will tell you, like, I've had UFC guys that have made a lot, and he named like two guys. He named
Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor.
Yeah, he named McGregor and Ronda
Conor
Rousey.
Made it in a boxing ring, by the way.
Conor made it in a boxing ring. Ronda Rousey was a once-in-a-generation phenomenon, and there hasn't been jack shit since.
And she probably made more money in movies than she did in the UFC. Let's put it, she was a special case. She was going to make money either way.
But you see what we're saying here? Like, if you're a fighter, like, there's going to be benefits to fighting in the Zuffa League. There's going to be benefits to doing it the traditional route and becoming a WBC champion one day, because you could make way more money. But it's going to be a decision of how do you feel like your career could go? Are you going to bet on yourself and go the traditional route and maybe become a Devin Haney? Or will you go with Dana White, where you probably have more job security, you have insurance, you have the UFC PI, you have TKO behind you, which is a freaking conglomerate and their whole marketing arm, and you can make good money. You can still make millions, but it's not the tippy-top millions.
Dan, this is America. This is America. Meritocracy is what the sport is all about. Bet on yourself, make the most money possible.
Sport was once about.
Yeah, well, listen, what Dana's talking about is communism. I don't want the money, the wealth to be disseminated to the people who don't deserve it. I want the winners. The winners get the – Dana loves saying this. You eat what you kill. That's bullshit. It's not true. That's not true. If the money gets disseminated to the lower tier, so those guys get paid a little bit more, but the max guys never get – that's not true. If you sell, then you really do eat what you kill. In boxing, you eat what you kill. You sell, you make millions. You're a star, you make hundreds of millions. It's just – that's what it is. And if you got to fight and you got to win. This is America, man. We got to be able to – I don't mind boxers being paid what they're worth if they are bona fide stars and they're willing to fight everybody.
It's a long-term play by TKO. Have the means, they have the savvy, they have very smart people. It's a long-term play to see if they could control another combat sport. But the Eddie Hearns of the world, the Bob Arums in Top Rank, when they get their footing back, the other promoters are not going to lay down, I don't think. They're going to get emboldened, if anything. They're going to align even more with the WBCs and the IBFs and all those, because what this is doing is just creating a little more confusion now. So now that Zuffa is going to have their own belt, pretty sure. That's why the Ali Act, a big part of it is, you know, when they're trying to rewrite it, is so they can become their own organization to give out the belts. So that in turn, it's good for TKO, it's good for Zuffa, for them and their end goals. But as a fan, we're adding more belts now to a sport that has four champions in every weight class?
I actually don't mind the four-belt era because it allows fighters to become world champion. In an era where we have champions who are holding belts hostages and who aren't fighting the best guys.
Right, you know what I mean? Adding more, though.
And of course I don't like adding more, but I don't want there to be one. I don't think one belt is really the answer.
But adding more to a, like, adding more and then potentially watering it down, but adding a champion that's only signed with one promotion, like, that's at least, like, the current situation now isn't great, But at least it's like, you know, you don't have to. You can have two champs, and you can have a champion at Top Rank, a champion at PBC, and then you can figure out who the real champ is in that division by just being a fan.
But there's also an opportunity for unification. If you're in your own league and you have your own belt, there's no unification. The Zuffa champion never gets to beat the WBC champion.
He said it himself.
You're basically in two different sports.
Dana said he's not going to be working with other promoters.
Right. So, exactly. So, I don't give a shit about my made-up belt. I want to be a WBC champion that's been around for 50 years. My WBO belt is really important to me. And I've always said I'd rather be what I am now, be a world champion and not be rich, than be rich and not have ever been a world champion.
Not poor.
Well, I'm doing just fine. But I'm a world champion, and I hold that near and dear, and it's very important to me.
Right. 100%, bro. Interesting stuff. What does it mean for DAZN? Turkey is involved with this league. He's also has a 10% stake in DAZN. Where are these fights being distributed? So 12 events on Paramount Plus, which is going to be the league, but the CBS ones, are those big fights? Is like a Canelo Crawford going to end up on CBS, or do they go to Netflix? I've heard part of this deal will still allow them to, you know, fund a huge fight and have the autonomy to put it on different networks. So that could be pretty good, but it's just getting more and more confusing. It's a very interesting time in the boxing
world.
Very murky, because you think you have it all figured out. I think I know the business side of things for the most part, but you know, the Turkey involvement has changed everything because he wants his hands in everything. And now he has his hands in Paramount Plus. He has his hands in DAZN. He could potentially have his hands in Shakur versus Teofimo, which could end up on Amazon. Eddie Hearn, as we record this, has just posted a picture with Turkey and said, "Major announcement coming." Nothing is out of bounds, to take a term from HBO Real Sports. It's a crazy time.
What if the FTC just steps in and goes, "No, this is a monopoly. Stop, cut, boom, can't do this, can't move." Everything, there would be a huge wrench.
Well, if they didn't do that to the UFC, UFC is a monopoly.
Yeah, 100%.
They've squashed everyone. They've bought.
I wonder how much money is spent lobbying for the FTC not to look at these companies.
You're talking about like the TKO or Turkey or just all?
I'm just talking about all just, you know, and everything. But I mean, for the UFC, which is a monopoly, and now Zuffa Boxing is trying to do the same thing over here.
They're becoming more of a monopoly, TKO. Yeah. I mean, they have WWE, they have UFC, and now this is a very, very slow play. It's like a 10-year play. And Dana could say, like, "I'm going to make you care about these fights. No, you're not. Like, easier said than done.
No, you're not.
It's because you're Dana White. Like, yes, you have a great track record for like 10 years ago. Like the last 10 years have been iffy. But then again, you are generating billions in terms of bringing new TV deals. But I would say like creating stars, like I haven't seen many come out of the UFC. I've seen a very solid and dependable business for sure, but I haven't seen like mega stars.
So they will knock each other off too soon.
It's the nature of the sport. Yeah, smaller gloves. But like he says,
that's not the reason I think that they get knocked off. It's not the smaller gloves, because it's just there's
parity.
There's parity, but also
you think like there's more knockouts. So like,
well, there's more ways to lose.
Yes,
it's a really difficult sport. It takes a long time to get to a very high level because you have to learn so many techniques, and at the same time, there's so many ways to just have an off night and get caught, and which makes it really hard to have any kind of longevity in the sport. Right. We're not seeing that, and guys are getting better and better and more dangerous. So, if you don't have longevity, you can't be a star.
Absolutely, that's why boxing is way different sports. That's why I always say these are two different sports, guys. Apples and oranges. But Dana says I'm gonna make you care about this league and these fights. You're gonna be in your seat at the beginning of the night. Like, no, just because you're saying it doesn't mean it's gonna happen. So you have to have star driven sport.
He also thought it was a good idea to open up the press conference to the media the way they do the UFC, and he got flamed. So best laid plans. It wasn't just Sean. There was other ones too.
Where's that interview? Dana said he would give Sean an interview one-on-one. I'm still waiting for that. I want to see that. Like, I generally want to see that interview. Like, that would be awesome to see. I've seen him do a lot of interviews today, Dana. I hope
Sean Satel was not one of them.
No, I haven't yet to see it unless he posted it, and I haven't seen it yet, but we will see. Yeah, interesting time in the boxing world. Another player now with Paramount Plus joins an ever-growing list of streaming services and promoters and all that. We'll be back later on in the week with another episode. I'm heading to Yankee Stadium this week. Three-game set. Playoffs begin. Yankees-Red Sox. Three-game wildcard series. I'm very nervous. Very, very nervous.
We don't like the Red Sox on this channel.
We hate the Red Sox.
We literally hate the Red Sox.
Love the Yankees. October baseball is here. October boxing is here. We have you covered every week. Chris, go back to your Hollywood desire life over there in Hollywood East Jersey City.
I'm gonna go sip a martini and rub elbows in a tuxedo.
What a life. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. See you next time.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.